Welcome back or welcome to the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and this is another episode of Eurotrack with Katie Scheid. In the first half of this edition, we're recapping Katie's win at Grand Raid and her decision to return to Western States next year. And in the second half, we do a retrospective on the 2023 European Ultra Trail scene, offering our opinions on top performances, favorite moments, rookies of the year, emerging trends, and from all of that, our predictions, or at least some of them, for next year. One final thing, as 2023 comes to a close, we are starting to plan Eurotrack publishing cadence and content for next year, and we'd like to hear from you. Shoot us a DM on Instagram at @runsingletrack with your thoughts on what races and topics we should cover, because we are all ears right now in the planning phase. One other thing before we get started, thank you to NAAQ for sponsoring this episode. NAAQ, spelled N-A-A-K, is the official nutrition sponsor of Singletrack and has a special deal for listeners and viewers in which you can use code SINGLETRACK15 at checkout on their website for 15% off your next order. Over the last month, I have been using their watermelon drink mix in the build-up to an early December road marathon, but when I'm more in trail mode, which is most of the time, I really dig their energy bars and purees as well. On the bar side of things, I have been really digging their caramel macchiato caffeine bar, and on the puree side of things, I have been turning to their sweet potato flavor. NAAQ is a sports nutrition company tailored specifically to the ultra trail running scene. And again, if you're curious and you want to try some yourself, head over to their website, grab a few items, and use code SINGLETRACK15 again for 15% off your next order. With that, let's get on to Eurotrack. We are back with the third edition of Eurotrack. I'm joined by colleague Katie Scheid. It has been a bit since we've chatted. It was the last episode of this was back in early July after Western States in Lavaredo, just before the Hard Rock 100. I am hoping that we can do this on a more regular basis next year, because I love this series. In this particular episode, we're going to talk about the Grand Raid. We're going to talk about Katie's decision about Western States next year. And then we'll sort of do a roundup of things like top performances, rookies of the year, etc., on the European ultra trail scene. But Katie, before we get into it, how's everything going in your life? What's up with you?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me back for another episode of Eurotrack. This has been fun, so I'm glad we get one more in before everyone starts skiing. But yeah, here we've been sick, we've been doing house projects, we've been resting, baking, kind of hanging out and trying to follow the weather patterns, which are quite crazy right now in the Alps. We have a little bit different weather than you might be seeing people posting from like the Northern Alps near Chamonix, where it's flooding, and there's like a lot of flood warnings there right now with the melting snow that they got early season and then some rain. Here we were just having like some big wind storms a few days. Now it's very warm. I ran in shorts and a t-shirt today at 2,000 meters. So yeah, we're kind of just impatiently waiting for ski season to start.
I was going to say, based on Instagram, it looks like you've had an extended running season at your home base.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now we're just in that season where we're like waiting for the next one.
Cool. Well, starting with Grand Raid, my only exposure to this race has been just hearsay based on what American runners like Joe Grant have done there and Sabrina Stanley. Of course, watched Dylan Bowman's film on the race about 2 years ago. Talk about your inspiration to do it, your reason for doing it. What brought you to Grand Raid this year?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a pretty iconic race, especially in the French trail running scene. Last year was its 30th anniversary, so this year would be 31. And it's actually even older than that. There was another race with a slightly different name before that, so it's actually even older than 30 years. And so it's been around a while. It's also televised, like, on the normal French TV, so anyone can watch it. So it's very well known. If you tell someone in France that you're a trail runner, they'll ask you if you've done UTMB and if you've done the Grand Raid, and those are the two that they'll ask you about. So it was something I'd known about for a long time. I'd actually first been to the island, which is an overseas French department. And for people who don't have their geography like totally down to a T, which I didn't when I first heard of this island, it's Reunion Island, and it's just to the east of Madagascar. And the population is just under 1 million. So it's very small, but does have like that French infrastructure still because it's an overseas department. So yeah, my reason in wanting to race there this year was basically that I'd been to the island twice, once in 2018 to crew for Germain and once last year also to crew for Germain. And both times, I would say the first time I was a little off put by the race. It seemed like way too big and scary for me. And the second time I started to like the island a little bit more. It seemed like more of something that I might be interested in. And then thinking about the race this summer, following Western States, I was pretty motivated to do another kind of adventure long race again. And yeah, it's generally like a moderately competitive race and brings like good atmosphere. It's just unique, really unique to anything else. And I think I was just looking for like kind of an adventure style race, which Western States like was kind of an adventure in that it was new, but it wasn't an adventure as much within the race itself because it does run so fast. You don't do anything at night or like, I mean, I had a headlamp for the last, I don't know, hour. So yeah, that's kind of what I was looking for. And I think we'll get into this, but I think I got a little bit more than I was really ready for, but I was happy to be there anyway.
I definitely want to talk about that. Talking just a bit more about the ambiance though, from what I could tell, just as an onlooker watching like the live stream, you know, watching these films in the past, it kind of has equal parts remoteness and fanfare. Like when you get into that Mafate section, I think it's only accessible by the runners or by foot and maybe by helicopter. But then also it seems like the island, the people on the island sort of buy in and want to be there to cheer on. So did that kind of match your expectations, or is it like, does it lean more towards remote or more towards fanfare?
Yeah, I think that's a really good observation. It is pretty 50-50, actually. Like, the first 50K, you're really running through, you're on, actually, like, a lot of roads, dirt roads, trails that kind of go between houses, in farm fields, basically, and there's just people everywhere. Like, essentially, the island shuts down for these kind of, 3 or 4 days that the race takes place over. So, actually, one interesting thing is that the cutoff times are quite nice to runners who don't want to run very fast. So as opposed to something like UTMB, where there's a lot of people who get cut off with the time barriers, this is pretty open. So a lot of people do it in like, you see people finishing Diagonal des Fous who maybe couldn't make the time barrier on UTMB. So it is a bit more inclusive in that way. And they do reserve a certain number of spots for people who live on the island. Okay. So the way it's described is, everyone on the island has either run the race, has a family member who has run the race, or like knows someone running the race. So everyone is really supportive. There's nobody who's like opposed to this race in any way. Like the whole island is 100% behind it. I mean, we had a taxi driver who was like, oh, wow, you're here for that. So cool. Like anyone you talk to, they're so happy you're there for the race. So it gives it this really positive vibe. Like you really feel like you're part of the fest. It's basically the yearly festival of the island. So yeah, you do have this like super populated, like with cheering and lots of ambiance for the first 50K. And then it's super remote after that. There's one place where you pass through somewhere where it's accessible by the road. In Silaus, which is kind of the, I like to describe as the Courmayeur of the Diagonal des Fous. Cool. But once you, drop into the Mafate Cirque, it's extremely remote and you're not seeing very many people. So, and then once you leave Mafate, you kind of get that first 50K vibe at the end again. So yeah, kind of two super energetic sections, as this like the bread of the sandwich, and in between is like completely remote. You're on your own in the heat, no ice, no nothing. You pack your aid station stuff days before because somebody's hiking it in for you. Yeah, so you have both extremes.
Is there I mean, I know you've been there three times now. Is there a reference point for similar geography or topography elsewhere in the world? Like for American viewers and listeners, is Grand Raid like any other race or area of the world, or is it truly this unique ecosystem that doesn't have comparison?
I would compare it most closely to something like Madeira. But it doesn't even match that, really. It's a little bit different. But I would say Madeira, kind of with a little bit less organization and longer and hotter. Yeah.
You said that you were there for an adventure. That was one of the reasons why you signed up. And you know, we'll talk about it in a moment. You had a successful day, but you also just said a moment ago that you kind of got more than you bargained for. So talk about that.
Yeah, I was pretty excited to be there from the start, and I think all of the running I had done preparing for Western States, which I've expressed before is not like what I've done in the past, is a lot more traditional running. I think it gave me a lot of confidence in the first 50K when you're on roads and can really run very quickly. And I think I maybe got a little bit carried away there because I had never felt so confident on such runnable terrain before. So everything was going very well until the last six, seven hours where you hit the second night. And I think for me, this is what really distinguishes the Grand Raid to any of the other like big 100-mile races, is that everyone does a second night. Even Orléans, who won, he still did many hours with a headlamp at the end. So, because the sunset is at 6 or 6:30, so I think he finished around 9 PM. So he would have still had his headlamp for like around 3 hours, and I had my headlamp for 6 hours. So I've never done full nights. In one race before. So when I approached that second night, it was really hard physically and mentally to know that you still had so much to go and it was going to be dark. And you kind of felt like this, it's hard to describe if you haven't been in the night of an ultra race before, but you just kind of feel like, what is happening? Like I'm just like floating in this bubble and I don't know what's going on. So yeah, I think that's what really got me at the end, and it was my first experience with that. The times that I've done UTMB, not very quickly, I still finished, I think maybe 2 hours in the dark. So you know the end is there. You can still see the lights of Chamonix when you're putting your headlamp on, which is a really different feel than knowing you still have 7 hours when you're turning your headlamp on the second time.
I was going to say at the front of a race like UTMB, maybe you deal with a bit of sleep deprivation because you're starting at 6 p.m. You go through one night and it's been a while since you last got a good night. But in the case of a race like Grand Raid, I mean, you're truly going into that second night. Were there any insights or takeaways that you picked up from that? Like, are you someone that deals decently well with being at that sort of like awareness or sleep deficit? Or is that something you work on for future races, or if you ever make a return here again?
I think the best thing is that it just showed me what it feels like to be in that situation. So like next time I can approach it knowing like, all right, it's going to feel like you're hitting rock bottom when you approach that second night. Otherwise I think it's also just about, managing your effort and eating and drink, you know, the normal stuff, nutrition, pacing.
Going back to your sort of comparison to Madeira, like if you had to pick another race, maybe it does share some of the features or the elements of Madeira. Outside of sort of that Mafat section where you're going into a pretty remote area and you're sort of on your own and it's, you know, maybe a high consequence environment, what else about the course did you find interesting or challenging? And like, is there a type of runner or running that does well here? Is it more of like a hiking type race?
It's definitely more on the side of hiking type race. You do need to be able to run at the beginning. As I said, the first 50K, there's almost no downhill. And I think it's 2,200 meters of climbing and 55K So it's pretty gradual uphill, a lot of running, a lot of like kind of fast running. So you do have to be able to manage that without losing too much energy. And then after that, it's a lot of just like burly hiking, and then you finish on the most technical trails at the end. So you have to be able to like maintain, you know, your both your technical skills, like mentally and physically. You have to be someone who's pretty durable after that long. So I mean, you've seen someone like Jean-Philippe Tchoumi, who's done really well there. He was second last year and he was third this year. He's definitely someone who's more, they call him the tractor in French. So he's someone who just like can keep a steady pace going and be really durable on those technical sections. So yeah, I'd say it's someone who can run well, good enough, doesn't have to be great, and then get through that technical stuff like unscarred and then be able to hold that together at the end.
I love that nickname, the tractor. That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. I remember, again, going back to Dylan's film, what I recall from it, he was saying, you know, he regretted not getting there well in advance because it was one of those courses where really the only way to appreciate it, the only way to have success on it was to have had experience on it, maybe to do some training on it, because I think he was living in Oregon at the time and his definition of technicality did not match up to the realities of what was technical on the Reunion Island. It looked like on Instagram you spent a fair bit of time there in advance, maybe a few weeks, and you mentioned having been there to Cru Germont in two prior years. Talk about just the amount of time you were able to get out there and study the course and get acquainted with it, et cetera, and what that meant.
Yeah, I think in Dylan's defense, it's not even about getting on the terrain early, but also understanding the whole scene around the race. Like, as I explained, the thing with the people who are crewing for you, which you saw in his movie, is managed mostly by this one guy, Fabrice, who has like a team of people he deploys into the more remote areas to help with crewing. So you, like, mentally, you need to know, okay, I probably am not going to have exactly what I want at any aid station. I'm going to have to be able to like adapt to anything that happens. Also, especially for the men, it's pretty common that the first guys get lost in different places in the night because there are a lot of like really small trails, and sometimes marking isn't done as well as you might expect. So I knew this from other from watching other races and also just being in the French trail scene. You hear all the stories of this. You also hear the stories of, I think the classic story that comes out of this race is, oh, I was doing so well, then I completely fell apart. I was laying on the side of the trail. Then so-and-so came up behind me, picked me up, and convinced me to follow them and keep going. Like, this is literally the story that everyone tells in slightly different renditions. So I think just hearing all of these stories, knowing, like, okay, when you show up to this race, it's not like UTMB. Nobody has a ticket at the aid station for one person to go inside the tent. It's just people everywhere. You don't really know what's happening. Nobody speaks English. The trails, yes, then we can get into, like, the terrain itself. Are very technical in a way that is very hard to describe. And also, as someone who had been on the island twice before, I still hadn't fully understood what that meant until I ran on the trails those 3 weeks or two or three weeks we were there ahead of time. We did two like long days on the last, I guess, 80, maybe the last 80K of the course, right when we arrived. And I remember at the end of the second day, I was like, wow, this is just crazy. Like, if I can finish this, I'm going to be super proud of myself. So that's coming from someone who had already been around the race twice. So I think for someone to just show up, I mean, honestly, I think what Courtney did last year is just, I can't even understand how she did that, honestly, because she arrived maybe a week before. She hadn't really been on many of the trails. Maybe she saw a little bit, drove around, definitely doesn't speak French. Just had a crazy outstanding performance. So I think that's, it was a reminder of how outstanding that performance really was.
I was going to say that was one of my initial thoughts as well. Just again, echoing what you said, knowing all of the complications about logistics there, being in a foreign land, the importance, if you can, of getting out there ahead of time, the fact that she effectively on-sited it. I mean, she's had a lot of great performances, UTMB, Western, Hard Rock, you know, the list goes on, but that could be one of her greatest performances of all time, if not her greatest.
I think it's definitely at the top of the list. I know the Americans kind of missed it a little bit because they don't follow that race super closely or understand the context in which that happened. But yeah, I mean, it was crazy to be there on that day and watch her too. It was just really, it was really impressive. And even more impressive when I came back this year and was running on the trails and realized what it would be like to show up and not know what was coming.
You said earlier that one of the common threads for a lot of runners is sort of this moment where they do have to latch on to someone else. And it's this great lesson in camaraderie and getting each other to the finish line. Obviously you went on to win this race, so there was a fair bit of time where you were sort of on your own, but were there any opportunities for you to sort of feed off the energy of the race around you and to just benefit from that and all, any stories that come to mind?
Yeah, I had some more mini versions of the passed out on the side of the trail and someone dragged me to the end. I did get to run with a guy named Remy, who I know from Schemo. We ran together for quite a bit in the middle. Actually, we were both feeling really good at the time, and it was just nice to kind of have company. And that was actually really fun. And at some point, he stopped to go to the bathroom, and I stopped to go to the bathroom, and he didn't understand that I had stopped. And then he thought I was ahead and, like, made a push to try to catch me again. And then we kind of, like, lost touch, unfortunately. And then, for sure, he was way stronger than me at the end. I wouldn't have been able to stay with him, but it was still fun to run with him for a while. And then at the end, like, I kind of had this breakdown in one of the last aid stations and was kind of dragging myself out, like, walking pretty slowly, knowing I had to run, like, 1K on the pavement in front of the crowd before, you know, kind of going off again. And a friend who I met at Eco Trail Paris in March came flying up next to me and, like, he was like, wow, this is so fun, like, come on, let's go. And so I just kind of grabbed his energy and followed him. I mean, he dropped me after 1K, but it was nice to have a little like tugboat out of town. Yeah. There and yeah, then I had one of the interesting things about this race is you overlap with the other distances, and one of the other distances is a relay of four people. So you often end up around someone who's only, it's quite impressive to still do 40K on this island, who's doing like 40K. And so they have a little bit more energy. And I ended up sharing quite a bit at the end with this woman who was doing the relay and was really, really relieved to kind of have some company in this really low point. So yeah, I feel like I shared different sections pretty intensely with a few other people. And it feels more like camaraderie than in any other race, really. I think because of the difficulty of the race, you truly feel like everyone is on the same team. Even though there's a race happening, it really feels like, okay, we're doing this together. Like, let's get each other to the end, because this is just totally crazy.
I know that, you know, there was that North Face movie that just came out that sort of summarized your day at Western States earlier this year, but you had this really interesting comment towards the end of the film where you said that even on your good days, you're always thinking about, you know, what if you did this or that differently? What if you changed this or that small thing? Because that's sort of like the operating system you have in your mind that inspires you to kind of keep pushing and keep getting better at the sport, keep coming back to these things. What were those small things or like tactical changes that you might reconsider if you were to do a race like Grand Raid again, or just for any future, you know, stuff you do in 2024?
Yeah, I think I had a lot of things coming out of this race. I mean, I think this happens in a different way when you finish feeling pretty spent. Like, I didn't finish feeling like, wow, I mean, I was very happy that I won the race. Like, that was, this has been, you know, on my list of like dream races for a while. So to win is, yeah, it, you can't ask for much more than that. But I finished in a pretty like kind of sad state. And yeah, so when you come back, you know, when you get back to the hotel after that, you're kind of like, oh man, like what happened? Why did I finish in that state? And I think for me, there was like a few moments where I think I lost track of how much I was eating and didn't like, yeah, I think maybe it was that. And also just not being mentally prepared for how difficult that second night would be. I think I sort of forgot before the race that the sunset was so early and that it was going to be a really long time with a headlamp the second night. I think those were the main things. Was, yeah, just being ready for that. And yeah, I think that's difficult because it was also my first time in that situation. So I'm a little bit like nicer to myself there. Like, okay, you can't expect to know what that's like having never done it before. But I think now I'd be interested to go back with that information and say, okay, like now I'm here. Now what can I do? I know it's going to be really difficult. So I think it's more just the knowledge of this year.
I'm sure there are a lot of listeners and viewers, you know, fellow athletes that, you know, saw your win, saw Courtney's win last year, and they are super inspired to do this race one day and maybe even like organize their entire year around it to some extent. I think one of the things that I found impressive in your case is, you know, you were doing other, you know, markedly different types of training for races like Western States for the bulk of the year leading up to this. So it wasn't like you made this the focal point. For anyone that does want to do that, do you have any like last bits of advice on how you would prepare if you were to make this like the main thing, like someone might make UTMB their main thing?
I really think this race, I mean, besides a few exceptions, it's something that you have to go in the first time saying this is my first try. and unless you strike a miracle, like there's gonna have to be a second one. I think I was really lucky because I had been there before twice. I had like all the, you know, I at this point I can speak French, so if something happens I can like communicate with people and ask for help specifically, not just like in hand motions. I think those are important things. I would say it's difficult to prepare for if you've never seen it before, if you've never been there. But yeah, I mean, for sure you can. I think for most people it would be quite difficult to like finish feeling like you really performed at your best, having never been there before. But yeah, getting there early for sure, if you've never run on the terrain, can help. It's also a difficult place to visit if you don't speak French. But yeah, I mean, the only place I can think to really like properly train for that would be maybe like on Madeira Island or like Corsica, for example, is where Orleans did his last big trainings. He did like a week on Corsica because it's hot and super technical. So there's some places in Europe where you can try to get that, but it's still not the same kind of technicity even on Corsica. So it would be tough. I would say, like, you would have to go in. This is how I started the race, and, like, my mindset was, like, anything can happen, and I'm ready for anything to happen. And I will not be upset if, like, something doesn't go to plan, if something surprises me. Like, there's going to be surprises, a lot of them, and I'm just going to be calm and deal with them as they come up. And I think that's the best thing going in. And it's something you don't really need. I mean, you need some of that at other races, but I don't expect to get lost at UTMB, you know, like I know where the trail goes. There's no question about it.
Well, it goes without saying, huge congrats on the win at Grand Raid. And yeah, I'm just starting to kind of piece together the trend right now, but there has been quite a bit of American women domination at a lot of these major European focused races as of late. Grand Raid and UTMB coming to mind, Hard Rock, Western States. I don't know if that's creating any competition in other regions of the world where they want to change that, but I think it's pretty cool that 2 years in a row the American female winner has been an American.
Yeah, and with Sabrina too, it's actually, I was just looking at like the historic results, and the US has the, besides the French, which almost every year French wins both sides, men and women. But besides the French, the women and Spain, sorry, the American women and Spain, comprised of Killian two times and Nuria Picas once, have the most wins at this race. So,
Cool.
doing pretty well.
I don't often advertise races on single track, but when I do, it's because I truly believe there is something special going on, and that is certainly the case here. The Hellbender 100, named for the giant salamander native to western North Carolina, is one of the most special 100 milers in the United States. Take it from two-time Hellbender 100 finisher Carl Meltzer, who calls it, quote, "the best course on the East Coast, hands down, exclamation point," end quote. This homegrown, volunteer-driven race is organized by a local nonprofit with partial funding from the McDowell County Tourism Development Authority, and 10% of the revenue from the 2024 race will be donated to local community organizations. Registration is now open for the May 10th race, which will take you through a grueling tour of the massive Black Mountains into deep valleys into the summit of Mount Mitchell, the highest mountain east of the Mississippi. The top three finishers in the men's, women's, and non-binary categories will each receive a hand-carved wooden Hellbender. So visit www.hellbender100, all spelled out, for more information and to register. And stay tuned, because I believe we will be doing a giveaway for two entries to next year's race on the Run Single Track Instagram channel later this month or next. With that, let's get back to the show. I want to talk about Western states really quickly before we get to sort of like end of the year discussion from the European ultra trail scene. I saw that on Ultra Sign Up, you're registered for the 2024 Western States 100. Why are you coming back?
Yeah, you saw. It wasn't really a secret, but yeah, I guess I can share it here that I will be bib F2 next year. The first thing was that finishing second, of course, leaves you with like this little taste of like almost winning, which is something that really inspires me to come back, because it is such like an important race in our sport, and it's such an iconic race, and it's something that I want to like continue to be part of. And I was really happy to be there this year and kind of get the lay of the land, see how everything comes together on race day, which in a good way was kind of underwhelming, I would say. Like, it was like, oh, okay, it's pretty chill. Like, this is a cool stage to try to perform on. It feels like everyone is super supportive, and not that people are unsupportive in other places, but it just, you really feel that support, and I wanted to come back for that. I also logistically didn't want to put myself in a position where I had to race to do another race. And having the offer for the bib this year made that quite easy to not have to race to do another race. Because I didn't know that I wanted to come back to Western States at some point. So it definitely reduces some of the friction to just do it the next year. So, yeah, and I also, just thinking about it, started getting excited. And that's like my cue to myself that it's a good idea. Like, if I start thinking about a race and then I'm like, oh, yeah, oh, what if I did that? And then I went there to train, and then I was, you know, that when all those thoughts start coming together, it's like, okay, this is something that motivates me. So yeah, I'm excited to be back and be in America again.
I probably have to recheck Ultra Sign Up, but you said bib F2. Does that mean Courtney is coming back as well for bib F1? And would that roll to you if she decided not to come back?
No, I think you just get your place from the year before. So I have no idea if she's coming back.
I wonder who takes one in that case.
I think nobody has it. Nobody. It's just, yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, it'd be great if she was back.
I know. That'd be fun. That would be really cool. How much did having her in the race last year, in a sense, pull you to that time in that finish? Do you think like having her there again would have a similar effect where you could really further get the best out of yourself?
I think that having her there more than anything, especially at the beginning, kind of gave me the confidence that it was okay to be running at that speed. Because it didn't I think both of us would tell you, like, it didn't feel overly fast, but the fact that we were both doing it together felt like, okay, this is good. Like, we were also running together in the snow, which is super helpful for, like, spotting where to run. And yeah, I think maybe, like, picturing the same race scenario without her there, I maybe would have gotten concerned that I was, like, running too fast, because I would have, I mean, we had kind of a gap going into Robinson Flat. So I think I would have got there and, like, kind of freaked out. And the fact that I got there, like, more or less with Courtney, like, a little bit behind her, made me feel like, okay, like, this isn't totally insane. And then, yeah, for sure, after that, it gave me, like, something to keep chasing, for sure. So I think it helped a lot. I can thank her a lot for helping me at least get the first, like, half of the race going pretty well. And yeah, it would be interesting, I think, if she wasn't there next year. I would have to, like, figure out my own pacing strategy at the beginning.
Right on. Yeah, there'll be a lot more to talk about in the coming months. Maybe last question here for you, because, you know, we talked about it in the last episode, how since Western, or maybe even since UTMB last year, there's been an extra confidence in yourself, just based on these accomplishments and the work you've put in, but also inevitably sort of an added pressure to continue to produce excellence. I find this interesting because, you know, you sort of doubled and tripled down with a really great performance at OCC, a great performance at Grand Raid. Talk as much as you can about how you're able to lean more into confidence versus sort of like getting consumed by the pressure in this current moment for future races like Western.
For me, I planned my season to like 75% this time last year. I said I wanted to do Western States because I had the ticket. And then knowing that Jarmel really wanted to focus on UTMB and that I wasn't as motivated to do UTMB or attempt doing both, I said I'm going to do OCC. This really motivates me. It's like a different thing. It's like a fresh, like, look on the end of the summer. And then I had put Diagonal Des Fous with a question mark at the end, depending on how I was feeling. So I didn't go into any of these things in a place of pressure. I've never felt pressured into doing any race from anyone other than myself. So I don't, the only pressure I've ever felt was really when I was first getting into the sport and I saw that I could maybe have a future, like, in the sport professionally. And I saw that and I really wanted it, like, really badly, but I knew that I was going to have to put out some, like, good performances in order to make that financially possible. And I think that's where I felt that I was under a lot of pressure, but it was from me. It wasn't from anyone else. I just really wanted this whole, like, thing to work out well. And honestly, now I feel less pressure because I do have, like, kind of results in my reserve, you know, to look back on and say, okay, like, I did that. Like, I can feel confident that it's possible to do something like that again. Whereas I think it's even scarier at the beginning when you're like, I don't know what I can do, but I really want to do well, but I haven't done it yet. So I actually feel for those, like, athletes who are just getting into the sport and have these big goals, but haven't had anything to back it up yet. I think that's the scariest place to be.
I think you answered the question perfectly. That's exactly where I wanted to take it. And it's a bit surprising to me because if I had to guess, just as an observer, I would have thought that most people would feel less pressure at the front end and more pressure as their careers progress, because maybe at the front end, there is a bit more carefreeness to it, or just sort of like experimentation. And they're, as we call them on this show, random ballers and not necessarily known by the community. And so they can kind of just like operate sort of in anonymity. But I think that what you said there makes a lot of sense, and it's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, and I think there's also kind of a point where maybe someone who's looking to take the next step in the sport to be like a full-time professional athlete, if you do have like a quote-unquote real job that is supporting your life, I feel like maybe there's a little less pressure there. But yeah. I know for Jarmo and I, like, he was ending his job, and I had the end of my PhD in sight while we were trying to become fully professional. And that was pretty scary. I mean, I don't think we realized at the time how scary that was, but we took a huge risk. And I mean, I can thank him for a lot of the confidence he had in us and like kind of putting, like kind of betting on us. I would put that way more on him. I'm more the like secure person. So I think I was really fortunate to have him as an outside source looking in, being like, we can be confident, like this is going to work out. So, but yeah, I do still really, when I see people coming up in the sport, I like really feel for them and know that it's really hard to be on those start lines when you're not really sure what can happen or what the future holds.
That's so cool. I remember, cause I asked Courtney a similar question, and she said that there was this very definitive, fateful conversation with her husband, Kevin, where they basically like sat down one day at dinner or something. And the gist of the conversation was, if not now, when? Let's put the chips down. Let's try this thing and see where it goes. Was there like, was it an ongoing thing between you and Germain, or was there like this like one definitive moment that you can point to? It's like on November 13th, 2019, we said, we're doing this thing and we're going to just like test it out. Or was it kind of a rolling?
I was more rolling. I mean, I still was employed as a PhD student at that time, so I had like some stability. Even if it didn't work out, I could like continue to a postdoc. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's a little bit different when one partner has a full-time job and the other one is like, okay, let's take a risk for a year or two. Then you still have something to fall back on. In our case, it was like, I mean, I had some stability, I would say. Like I could have, if it didn't work out, I still had like a path forward. So that was okay. But
also thanks to Rabbit for sponsoring this show. Rabbit makes my favorite trail running apparel, and I strongly encourage you to head over to their website and use code SINGLETRACK20 at checkout for 20% off your next order. Also thanks to Oladance. Oladance makes headphones tailored almost perfectly to the ultra trail running community. Their headphones have up to 19 hours of battery life, and their open ear design means you can wear them for a long time without experiencing any ear pain. So head over to their website, oladance.com, and use code ST in capital letters at checkout to get $30 off a pair of their OWS2 headphones. And with that, let's get back to the show. For this last section, hopefully we can start doing this on an annual basis, but it's sort of like a year in review of the European ultra trail scene. Of course, all of this is subjective, but I think it's fun to do. I think the audience enjoys it. And I have like six or seven categories here, so we might have to kind of go rapid fire. The first one is European ultra trail runner of the year, the male category, female category. And if you want, sort of like talk about who you were debating between and why as well.
Yeah, I'll start with the women. This was a much easier decision than the men. It, like for me, is really clearly Katharina Hartmuth from Germany. I mean, she just kind of, when you look through her past results, this is not her first time running ultras, but she really like made her name known this year. First at World Champs, where she finished second, and I should pull up her her results. But yeah, World Champs, and then after that she won Eiger, which is a pretty like classic, iconic race in Switzerland, and then second at UTMB. So I mean, there's not much more than that. I mean, it was pretty clear to me. Like, yeah, that was a pretty easy pick. And interestingly enough, she is currently doing her PhD across the street from where I did my PhD. So,
oh, wow.
That made me, you know, feel even more connected to her.
In a similar field?
Yep, she's doing atmospheric dynamics, or she's in the atmospheric dynamics department, which is more like environmental science. And I was across the street in the geology building. Where Nenke Brinkman also did her PhD. So pretty cool. Good block for the trail runners there in Zurich.
How about on the men's side?
So the men's side, I haven't even picked one yet. I just made a list because I was having too much trouble. But so my short list is Jonathan Albin, who won CCC and Templier just which was the same weekend as Diagonal des Fous. I know that this is for ultra running, but he did also come in third at Zegama, and was fifth at World Champs, fourth or fifth at World Champs. So in my mind, that comes into play, even though I know it's supposed to be separating the distances. Of course, Tom Evans at Western States this year. I mean, can't get much better than that. He unfortunately didn't have as much success at UTMB. It seemed like he had some strange health issue come up. And now he's on his way to Cape Town. So unfortunately, we're not doing this podcast after Cape Town. Maybe this would change something for me. And then Orléans Doulin-Pala, who won Hard Rock and also Diagonal des Fous. And then I had to put Germain on the list because, like, I was trying to do this totally, like, you know, no attachment, but, like, still his results this year are quite impressive. He was fifth at Transvolcania. He won the 90K du Mont Blanc. And then he was third at UTMB and second at Diagonal des Fous. So, yeah, pretty good results. trying not to be partial here. So yeah, that was my list. Pretty difficult to choose from that list. It kind of depends on if you favor more the like CCC Temple length ultra, or if you're going big on the 100-mile side, like fast 100-mile side. You got Tom, and then you have Orléans doing some like iconic races, but slightly less competitive. And Charmel kind of like going not winning anything, but still always, or no, winning the 90K, sorry, but not winning UTMB or Diagonal des Fous, but still like kind of showing his strength throughout the season. So I don't know if you have any input on what you would think on the men's side.
I think, regardless of affiliations here, Germain had an amazing season. I'm particularly impressed by the UTMB Grand Raid double, which is a very short turnaround for two races of that length, you know, amount of time on feet. So, yeah, I totally deserves to be in that realm. But yeah, I think everybody on that list I agree with. I think, especially among that list, I feel like we can use some of these sub-ultra races, like for John Albin, maybe as a differentiator. I think that just shows range, which is kind of cool, and maybe proves that they could operate really in any realm of the sport and sort of be in the same category or caliber of athlete. So that was a really good list. Orléans was amazing. I saw him at the end of Hard Rock this year, and I got to see him for most of the day because my colleague Scott and I were just sort of driving around the course, and I was amazed at how effortless that entire effort appeared to him. I saw him in the Silverton gymnasium after the fact, and he was just sitting in a chair upright, immediately eating a ton, talking with reporters, smiling, got up, was walking around, was not limping or shuffling. It looked like he was halfway through the Hard Rock 200, if there was a 200 mile race there. It looked amazing. So he was one of the few athletes on this circuit that I got to see in person. Same with Ben Yacht as well. But I was blown away by just how professional he looked and how flowy, like, or easy he made it all look.
Yeah, we enjoyed following him there this year. And then I will say that at Diagonal des Fous, he took like a couple minute lead on the first pack of men pretty early in the race, and then he just maintained it for 24 hours, which must be so mentally draining. I don't know how he did that. He got like a wide spread of results there. I think it'd be maybe the turning point if Tom walks away with a win at Cape Town, but yep. Otherwise, yeah, different spread.
How about performances of the year for you?
Okay, so I'll start with the girls again because I had an easier time picking this one. So for this, I thought immediately of Ingvild Kaspersen at CCC. I think not just for that race itself being in any way like totally over the top, but just her story coming into the race. Ingvild like is a name that we knew from more like sky running and Golden Trail series type races, like more the trail marathon distance. She was like a big breakout talent in, I don't know, 2017 through 2019. And then she took time off to finish her doctoral studies, like being a real doctor, not like my fake doctor. And then she was doing, you know, internships in hospitals during COVID, and had to take some time off, really focusing on running. And she slowly made her way back over the last like 2 years. Even last, I was checking her results. I didn't even realize that she did CC last year. Actually, she finished something like 30th. But she finished, and then I think she had a rough race at Black Canyon in February, but then came back and won CCC. So I think for that, it was kind of stood out to me as this performance, not for the run itself, but just for everything around it. So that was an easy pick for me.
I'll add one more, and I agree with you. This would just be one to acknowledge within the debate. I was really impressed by Anne-Louise Rousset's second place finish at the Hard Rock this year. She led for a lot of the race against Courtney, raced with a lot of courage, a lot of guts, ultimately finished in just over 27 hours, which in most years wins the race, but an incredible debut. And I was just impressed that even after losing the lead shortly after Ouray, still like kept with it and ultimately maintained, I think, like a 1 hour gap between herself and Courtney. So, really impressive coming overseas debut race at Hard Rock, tough course, similar, I think, to Grand Raid in the sense that, there's a lot of shock value there for people that are first time entrants. And, I was impressed. So not the performance of the year, but just like in the discussion.
Yeah, that's a good point. I actually kind of overlooked that, but yeah, no, she did have a great, first arrival in the U.S. and it was cool to watch that play out and see her be a little bit confident there. And I think to run ahead of Courtney in any situation would make you question what you're doing, so to see her do that was like pretty impressive.
How about on the men's side?
Men's side, I had a tie between Tom at Western States and John at CCC. I mean, John, I think in any other case, I would have said Tom at Western States, like, for sure, easy, like, big win. He worked hard for it. He was very, like, open in his discipline going into that. But John also, just that race at CCC for me, like, he is someone who finished second last year behind Petter, who completely blew us away with his finishing time, and seeing him kind of sit in the, not the back, but I want to say, you know, in a, not the front of the race for quite a while, and then put a push in at the end to catch Shen and win. I think there's just like, there was a lot that happened there, and it really shows the kind of like athlete and competitor he is, and the confidence he has in himself to not like feel that he needs to be at the front from the start. That's something I admire in him. It's something I need to get better at.
I would add just a few more comments to both Tom and John. I think what impressed me about John's situation, because I follow his YouTube vlogs, is he wasn't even apparently in the best mental state heading into CCC, even 3 or 4 months before. He was kind of like reconsidering his commitment to the sport, what he was doing. So, and I think the mental piece is typically the most important part, like buy-in is everything. Everything kind of emanates from that. So to see him sort of like find a rejuvenated inspiration is cool. And I mean, I think that's what it takes just for like table stakes at a race like CCC. So that was impressive. And then on Tom's side, you know, he, similar to you, spent a lot of time over in the US ahead of the race. And maybe, in my opinion, the most overlooked aspect of his buildup was he allowed himself to treat races like Black Canyon as a race that prepares him for future success at Western. So he did get beat by a fairly wide margin by Anthony Costales at Black Canyon, but he, like, even in his exit interviews, you heard him say like, this was just a part of the process. I'll be there at Western States. And I think one of the future like models for racing in our sport is a similar approach to the Tour de France, where people peak for a specific race and they care a lot less about sort of these truly B and C races on the road to them. And I think Tom demonstrated that. So, I found that impressive as well. Two kind of mindset observations, but I think I'm going to pick Tom, because his win at Western States was just so, like, and I mean this in a good way, like manufactured. Like, he really just like did every single, he hit every single rung on the preparation and mindset ladder to get it done.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll let you be the tiebreaker.
How about rookie of the year for you?
So this, I just want to let you know, I went into this defining rookie as someone new to ultra running, because, okay, yeah, most people in Europe come from like a lot of short races before. So for women, I kind of had a tie between Blandine. Well, my two finalists were Blandine and Ingvild. This was actually, besides CCC last year, UTMB was Blandine's second ultra, first over 100K, and to finish third at the most competitive mountain 100 miler in the world on your first shot at anything over 100K is pretty impressive. So that was a big one for me. And then Ingvild for her kind of story of comeback. And also when she was kind of at this high point of her career, she wasn't doing any ultra running. So this was kind of pretty new to her.
I had Blandine on my side. I think that her debut at UTMB, again, I had a slightly unusual definition of rookie. And it was like sort of like a breakthrough type season. And Blandine, okay, on the women's side was that for me.
Yeah. And I mean, I know we're talking about ultra running, but Blandine was also third at the French National Cross Country Championship in March, which for me just like... so much. I mean, if you want to talk about range, 8K to 172K is quite impressive.
I'll lead us off on the men's side. For me, how I defined rookie was not necessarily their first year in ultra running, but just sort of like what I saw as a breakthrough type season. And for me, it was Ben Demon. So Ben Demon is an American living in the French Pyrenees, and Ben took first at Penyagolosa, which he took down a Hannes Namberger CR there, and then he won at Andorra and took down a Zach Miller CR there, did DNF at UTMB, but then podiumed at Templier recently. And I'm also going to throw Grand Raid in there. So he got third about a year ago today at Grand Raid in the same, I think he ran with Courtney for a lot of the race. So I'm being liberal here, and I'm taking a long stretch of time, dipping into last year a little bit. But in the last 12 to 13 months, I'm considering that to be his breakthrough in the sport. And so that's why I have him as my rookie of the year.
Okay, so I had Ben, and then I remembered that he's American. And the way that I am treated, at least in these ranking type things, is as an American. So I was like, he can't count on the European side because he's American. But I appreciate you including him in his home residence area.
Yes.
So, yeah, I would say Ben. And if we had to pick someone who is not American, my pick was Benjamin Rubiel, who won world champs.
That's a really good one. Okay. I think Rubiel would be mine as well if I was true to our format.
But I agree that Ben had a really impressive season, and it would be interesting to see how much the American media picks up on it. I guess you did.
We did a pre-race interview with him before UTMB, and I found him fascinating. And I was actually just talking with him a couple days back, and I think we'll do a long-form interview probably at the top of the year, because I love the life he's built there in the Pyrenees and his focus on the sport, and well-spoken, all that kind of stuff. So kind of philosophical.
And you're both through hikers.
Yes. Yeah. Through hikers as well. Yeah. He's got a wild story. I think it's
yeah, it's he does.
How about, and this could be from any realm of the sport, but what was your favorite moment or highlight of the year on the female side?
On the female side, I had two. One was Ida's chase for the golden ticket. That was quite the story for the spring. Her going from Norway to Black Canyon, then back to snowy Norway to ski, then coming back for canyons with no return ticket, wondering if she was going to get a ticket. getting the ticket at Canyons, and then getting to Western States for her first 100-mile race. So I felt like there was a saga of Ida in the desert and on skis in Norway going after this golden ticket. So that was my first one. And my second one was just being surprised by the German women at the World Champs. We don't typically think of Germany. It's not usually the first country you think of when you think of ultra trail running.
Yeah.
But to see them finish so strongly at World Champs was like kind of a surprise to me. And yeah, that's thanks to Katarina, but also the rest of the team. And yeah, that was kind of that was interesting to me.
I totally overlooked Ida, but I had a similar pick on the women's side, and it was Ragna de Bots at Javelina. I'm incredibly biased by performances that I can see in person and in the moment. And I'm also fascinated by athletes on both the men's and the women's sides that are able to prolong their careers well into their 40s and still see excellence. And I think Ragna's 43 or 44. And I just saw her execute this race to get back into States next year in such a calculated way. I think she was, for a lot of the race, in fourth, fifth, third place. I caught her on the third lap getting some footage a couple weeks back, and she was, you know, a few steps behind Riley Brady, made that pass, and then definitively put space between them and, you know, went on and took second place, secured the ticket, is going back to Western next year. And I'm just impressed by her longevity, and I think that that's just going to be a continuing trend. And I think that athletes like Ida and Ragna on the women's side, you know, people like Javier Dominguez and Ben Yacht on the men's side, they're just showing that, you know, your prime, or like the wake of your prime, can be extended for quite a while. And that's just so thrilling to me.
Yeah, that's true. I completely forgot about, I mean, I was following the race and definitely saw that Ragna was there, but I forgot about that as an interesting performance, and I wasn't there, so I didn't get to see all of that in person. So, but it sounds like it was exciting.
It was so cool. It was textbook.
And yeah, she's always been an inspiration, just for how long she's been in the sport and all the different types of events she's able to perform at.
How about the men's side for you?
This one, I actually had trouble like thinking of like kind of, I was looking for more like a fun story moment. And the first, or kind of the only thing I could really think of, was Francoise's finish at Diagonal des Fous, which, of course, I was there, so I'm biased. But he is coming off a very complicated year plus of injuries and trying to figure out, you know, general health issues, and got cleared, I don't know how much he was cleared, but his doctor agreed it was okay for him to do Diagonal des Fous this year. And knowing that he maybe didn't have the best training, but that he just really wanted to come back to the sport and do this race that he loves. And he was running with the first group of men for quite a while. Eventually they all kind of exploded, like the group exploded, and he didn't finish as he normally does, which is winning the race, but he did get to the finish line and finish in the top 10. And I just found it impressive and just like reassuring that there is still this desire to finish a race in the sport that is becoming so competitive, because it's something that I value in athletes who choose to finish even though they know it's not their best performance. It's really easy to step off, like kind of step off the course in ultra running and slip away if you feel like you're not where you want to be. But I think to finish like that, just for the sake of finishing and for respecting your competitors and everyone else who's there, I think it's, yeah, that was something that really stuck out to me.
That's a really good one. I wish I had that one. The one that I chose was, again, one thing that we do on this show, which I'm hoping to change because it's my fault, is we talk a lot about the Western States UTMB double. It just gets a lot of media coverage in the American side of the sport. But I was super impressed by some of these other doubles on the European scene. So, for example, Germain at UTMB and Grand Raid, Aurelien at Hard Rock and Grand Raid. And I think I just have a maybe even more greater appreciation for that type of combination performance, because I think that those courses again, this is subjective, but I just see slightly more complexity in those courses and a more interesting transfer of skill sets. And they both demonstrated excellence there. So, yeah, they kind of opened my eyes to alternative, impressive doubles across the sport.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we see it in France. Like, it's not totally rare to see someone do UTMB and diagonal defu. It's difficult. It doesn't normally work out super well, but it is quite common just because they are the two biggest races in France.
Next one, biggest change or trend you noticed on the scene this year?
Yeah, I didn't have anything super specific here, but I just think this general professionalization of the sport, and just, I mean, this isn't unique to Europe in any way, but just brands investing more in the performance side of things, not just getting athletes and giving them stuff and maybe some money to travel or whatever, but really like setting up training camps, setting up infrastructure for athletes. I think that's something I've seen growing every year. And then I think on that same line is just most athletes in general being more open to sharing the types of professional things that they're doing. I think in the past we were pretty like, I felt like there was a bit of embarrassment. Maybe, I don't know if this is only in Europe or it's in the US too, but a little bit of like embarrassment about like maybe someone works with a mental coach but they don't tell anyone because that's their problem, or like they don't want someone to know that they're taking it seriously, or you know, working with someone on nutrition and not, you know, these types of things, like looking for outside help in specific realms. And I do think one great thing that I think Tom has brought to the sport is just being completely open about it. There are plenty of people who work with just as many professionals as Tom, but are not as open about about that kind of work that they do. And I think he kind of just like opened the door, like, guys, we can say we work with a mental coach, we can say we work with a nutritionist, we can say we work with a physiologist or have a doctor that helps us when we have a specific question about something. And I think that people are just being more open in general to sharing those things.
That was another really good one. You're carrying the team here with all the great takes. mine was pretty simple. Mine is just, and this isn't even really ultra trail related, but I was very interested to see the Golden Trail series picked up by Eurosport for TV coverage. And I think the jury's still out on how much of an impact that's going to have in terms of bringing new awareness to trail running in general and reaching new audiences, et cetera. But I felt like, you know, getting the Golden Trail series on TV is a pretty big deal for most sports in their growth trajectory. Getting on TV is a big deal. So that really stood out to me. But I loved what you said about just sort of like the renewed or the new level of openness among athletes about exactly what they do to be as good as they are, the mental side of things. And like, even what you said earlier about, you know, with Orléans, like needed to go to Corsica, for example, to get ready for Grand Raid. Like that's just next level commitment. I think that's what it's going to take. So that was a really good one. All right. Biggest prediction for next year.
I think we're just going to see more runners coming from shorter distances earlier in their career. Just that's the feel I get from talking to people. I think it is pretty hard to kind of make it on the like marathon distance scene, and I think people who don't kind of find success there have a really, like, if they want to pursue a professional career, it's really the money is more in ultra running right now because it does get more screen time. It's these big events that people somehow know more, there's a little bit more mass participation. And I think people are seeing like, okay, maybe I tried, you know, the Golden Trail series for 2 years and I never even got in the top 10, but you know, I really like long stuff. So maybe I'll try a few races. And I think once we have these athletes coming into races, especially something like in the 100K distance where you can kind of play on, it's different than 100-mile distance where you need a little bit more structure around everything. You can kind of just like redline it, I was saying red line in the context of ultra running, but you can kind of run pretty fast in 100K. Like, it's the, especially like if you watch CCC, like those people at the front of the pack are running very fast. So I think people coming from, you know, 40K can transfer their skills more easily to something like, yeah, maybe at CCC we're going to see a bunch of super, I mean, we already have super fast runners there. I don't want to insult anyone, but I think we're going to see those times getting pushed even faster.
That's a really good one too. Okay. Mine was that the best 200 mile runners in the European scene, like the winners and the podium performers at Tour, are going to invade the American scene next year at races like Cocodona and Moab 240, Bigfoot 200, Tahoe 200, and further expedite the growth of in popularity of 200 milers in America.
That's a really good one. I agree. I think we are going to see a bit more like cohesion between those extra long races. Yeah, and I think maybe see a bit more, especially for something like Tour, I think we might see some of those like high performing ultra runners, especially maybe in the sort of in the back half of their careers, I want to say. I don't know how to say this like nicely, but like maybe someone who sees the end coming, choosing like something like that as kind of more as like an adventure style race. I mean, it's something I would like to do at some point, not next year, but you know, I see that as like something in the distance.
It's okay. We can say it. The 200 mile scene is the assisted living community equivalent of ultras. Currently, it's how they all start out. All right, I'll lead us off into this next one, which is races we should cover in 2024. I'm very fascinated by this new World Trail Major circuit, and there's a couple relevant races to us. The obviously Trans Gran Canaria, Madeira, which you have a lot of experience with. And then a race that I really didn't know two, Swiss Canyon Trail and South Downs Way. So I guess those are, depending on like the trajectory of this thing and if it gains steam, we might have four races in that circuit to talk about next year. Do any of those stick out to you? And like, for example, do you know anything about the Swiss Canyon Trail race?
Yeah, I do. Well, I will first say Madeira is probably my favorite ultra race of all time. So 100% supportive of you going there. Trans Gran Canaria, which is kind of our one big winter race this in Europe. So that gets an interesting crowd. Normally it's more the athletes who don't do any snow sports who are there, but always good level. I think that's a race worth covering. Swiss Canyon Trail, I have crewed at. Jarmo did the 80K last year, and they've had they're usually pretty good about getting a couple elite athletes there each year. Cammy did it. It was one of the few races that happened during COVID. Okay. Not during COVID, but you know, during this complicated COVID time frame.
Yeah.
And Cammy did it one of those years. She did the 100K. Okay. But I do know the race organizer pretty well because I met him when I was there. But yeah, one thing that they're great for is taking care of elite athletes. They take care of everyone very well, but I was impressed mostly with how they took care of the elite athletes. I was there for Jarmo, but we were in a nice hotel, and there's really good prize money compared to like kind of the size of the event. So I'm not sure how if that's going to change next year or what his plan is, but it's a nice event. It's not in the it's not in the more traditional style Alps that you picture when you picture Chamonix, but it's in the Jura, which is also a super nice kind of smaller mountainous area, kind of this more like green grassy with Swiss cows type scenery. So it's a nice race and great organization.
Yeah,
and then I don't know the South Downways. Never heard of it.
Neither have I. I'll have to look into it more. But yeah, I'm on the Swiss Canyon website right now, and it looks stunning in its own way. Definitely not necessarily the Alps vibe, like you said. But this is cool.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say Swiss Canyon would be a great race for someone who likes those faster American, like those American style, faster, like non-technical, just a lot of running kind of race. That there's not a lot of elevation gain. So, which is pretty good for like the beginning of the season. If you're someone who lives somewhere where you can't get a lot of elevation gain in over the winter, like it could be a good kind of season opener for an American runner who wanted to come over to Europe.
Cool. Any other races outside the World Trail Majors that, we didn't really talk about or cover this year that you think we should consider for next year?
I mean, Eiger used to always be one of
Yeah.
those classics. And then there's always the unfortunate weekend of 90K du Mont Blanc, Western States, and Lavaredo. Because all three of those races deserve coverage, and
I know.
I think they're all on the same weekend again. So, yeah, to pick your battles.
Well, listeners and viewers, stay tuned as we figure out our programming for next year. But regardless, I'm super excited. Last thing I want to cover before we go, and this has been awesome, Katie, is just any anecdotal, personal highlights from this past year. Obviously, you had a fantastic year. But is there anything that maybe we haven't covered that that you can share on that front before we go?
I mean, I think this year for me just felt like it was really broken into chunks, and I think it brought me a lot of like freshness, even though the season itself, when I look back on my first big running week being the Coastal Challenge in February in Costa Rica, and then finishing just a few weeks ago, the end of October, like that's the longest season I've ever had. And when I, count the days, I see that it was a lot, but it honestly doesn't feel like it was that much because I really broke it into, okay, this is getting ready for Eco Trail. Okay, now I'm in the US getting ready for Western States. Now I'm in this kind of UTMB support mode slash doing OCC, and then kind of turning around the last, I really didn't have that much time between OCC and Diagonal des Fous, but like then having this last little kind of trip, like race trip with Chamonix to both do the same race, that I always wanted to do. So I felt like I really had these distinct chunks, and I think that's something I'm going to keep in mind moving forward, is just like kind of changing things up in the middle of the season. I think I used to always approach things like, okay, this is the year I'm going to do UTMB, so everything has to be similar to UTMB the whole year, which for sure, like in some ways, that's the way to do it. But I think having smaller goals that kind of change up the feeling or even the location a little bit in between brings a, like kind of some freshness to the whole year.
Awesome. On my front, mine are kind of cheesy, but starting this mini series was one of them. I've really enjoyed having you on the podcast regularly and getting your perspective. I've certainly learned a ton about the European scene as a result and become more aware and invested in races that are not named UTMB and Western States and the golden ticket designations. And then sort of on the movement physicality front, I got to spend about 3 or 4 weeks this summer in New Hampshire and Maine, playing around in the Whites, playing around in the Appalachian Mountains, Sugarloaf area, Katahdin area, and that is my sanctuary. So that was a reminder to me that I need to get back there as often as possible because it's sort of like the reminder of why I even got into this in the first place. Those are mine too.
Okay, this is a reminder to me that I need to spend more time back there too. So
It's the
maybe
best.
2024, back to the Whites.
We'll have to link to your one of the movies that you did with An back in the day in the New Hampshire White Mountains, which is excellent. I'll put that in the show notes because that every time I go back, I typically will put that on the plane ride home, and it'll get me inspired to go
Oh,
up to
geez.
North Conway. Anyways, Katie, pleasure to have you on again. I'm not exactly sure when we're going to do the next one, but I'm guessing if we do like Trans Gran Canaria or Madeira, it'll be January, February of next year. But seriously, super, super grateful that we do this together, and excited that we got to cap off 2023.
Yeah, thanks for like fielding my, I can't remember if it was my idea or not, but thanks for having me be part of this. And yeah, hopefully we'll have a little bit more to cover next year, and people will know the characters in the game a little bit better.